took a few paces more, then a few more. More lumps in the snow became evident. Tavi's stomach twisted with a slow shock of understanding. They were people. The Marat were looking at people on the ground. People dead so recently that their blood still stained the newly fallen snow. Tavi looked up and thought he saw light from the Marat's torch reflected from water not far away. The lake, then. Aldo Holt. Tavi watched the Marat walk a quick circle, the light of his torch at one point catching the sloped walls of the Stedholt proper. Bodies lay in a line leading from the Stedholt gates one by one, as though the holders had made a last-moment effort to run, only to be dragged down one at a time and savaged into the snow. Tavi swallowed. Without doubt, the holders were all dead. People he had met. People he had laughed with, apologized to. People he knew, ravaged and torn to shreds. His belly writhed and he got sick, trying to lean far enough over the side to sit up onto the ground instead of the Gargant's saddle. The Marat leader came back, though he had passed the torch to the younger one. In each of his hands he held a vague, lumpy shape, which Tavi identified only as the Marat got close to the Gargant. The Marat leader held the shapes up in the light of the torch, letting out another low whistle to his men. Firelight fell on the severed heads of what looked like a dire wolf and a herd-bane, their eyes glassy. The residents of the Stedholt, it seemed, had not died alone, and Tavi felt a helpless little rush of vengeful satisfaction. He spat toward the lead Marat. The lead Marat looked up at him, head tilted to one side, then turned to the younger one and drew a line across his throat. The younger dropped the torch's flame into the snow, quenching it. The Marat leader dropped the heads and then swarmed up the knotted cord back onto the saddle. He turned to Tavi and stared at him for a moment, then leaned over and touched a spot on the saddle that Tavi hadn't been able to avoid staining when he got sick. The Marat lifted his fingertips to his nose, wrinkled it, and looked from Tavi to the silent, bloody forms in the snow. He nodded, his expression grim, then took a leather flask from a tie on the saddle, turned to Tavi, and unceremoniously shoved one end of the flask into his mouth, squeezing water out of it in a rush. Tavi spluttered and spat, and the Marat withdrew the flask, nodding. Then he tied the flask to the saddle and let out another low whistle. The line of Gargants moved out into the night, and the spare Marat swung up behind another rider further down the file. Tavi looked back to find his captor studying him, frowning. The Marat looked past him, back toward the Stedholt, his broad, ugly features unsettled, perhaps disturbed. Then he looked back to Tavi again. Tavi puffed out a breath to blow the hair out of his eyes and demanded, his voice shaking, "What are you looking at?" The Marat's eyebrows went up, and once again that broad-toothed smile briefly took over his face. His voice came out in a basso rumble. "I look at you, valley boy." Tavi blinked at him. "You speak Alaran?"
"Some," said the Marat. "We call your language the trading tongue. Trade with your people sometimes. Trade with one another. The clans each have their own tongue. To one another we speak trade. Speak Alaran."
"Where are you taking us?" Tavi asked.
"To the Horto," the Marat said.
"What's a Horto?"
"Your people have no word."
Tavi shook his head. "I don't understand."
"Your people never do,"
he said without malice.
"They never try."
"What do you mean?"
"What I say."
The Marat turned back to the trail in front of them, idly ducking under a low-hanging branch. The Gargant swayed a bit to one side, even as its rider did, and the branch passed the Marat by no more than the width of a finger. "I'm Tavi," he told the Marat.
"No,"
the Marat said.
"You are Alaran, valley boy."
"No, I mean my name is Tavi. It's what I'm called."
"Being called something does not make you that thing, valley boy. I am called Doroga."
"Doroga?" Tavi frowned. What are you going to do to us?
Do to you?
The Marat frowned.
Best not to think about it for now. But Valley Boy, be quiet.
Daroga flicked a look back at Tavi, eyes dark with menace, and Tavi quailed before it, shivering. Daroga grunted and nodded.
Tomorrow is tomorrow, he said, turning his face away. For tonight you are in my keeping. Tonight you will go nowhere. Rest.
After that he fell silent. Tavi stared at him for a while and then spent a while more working his wrists at the cords, trying to loosen them so that he could at least try to escape. But the cords only tightened, cutting into his wrists, making them ache and throb. Tavi gave up on the effort after an endless amount of squirming. The sleet, Tavi noted, had changed into a heavy, wet snow, and he was able to lift his head enough to look around him a little. He couldn't identify where they were, though dim shapes far off in the shadows nagged at his memory. Somewhere past the lake and Aldo Holt, he supposed, though they couldn't be heading anywhere but to Garrison. It was the only way into or out of the valley at that end. Wasn't it? His back and legs were soaked and chill, but only a while after he noticed that, Daroga glanced back at him, drew an Alaran weave blanket from his saddlebags, and tossed it over Tavi, head and all. Tavi laid his head down on the saddle mat and noted idly that the material used in its construction was braided gargant hair. It held his heat well once the blanket had gone over him, and he began to warm up. That, coupled with the smooth, steady strides of the beast, was too much for Tavi in his exhausted state. He dozed off sometime deep in the night. Tavi woke, wrapped in blankets. He sat up, blinking, and looked around him. He was in a tent of one kind or another. It was made of long, curving poles placed in a circle and leaning on one another at the top, and over that was spread some kind of hide covering. He could hear wind outside through a hole in the roof of the tent, and pale winter sunlight peeked through it as well. He rubbed at his face and saw Fade sitting on the floor nearby, his legs crossed, his hands folded in his lap, a frown on his face. Fade, Tavi said, are you well? The slave looked up at Tavi, his eyes vacant for a moment, and then he nodded.
Trouble, Tavi, Fade said, his tone serious. Trouble.
I know, Tavi said. Don't worry. We'll figure a way out of this. Fade nodded, eyes watching Tavi expectantly.
Well, not right this minute, Tavi said after a flustered moment.
You could at least try to help me come up with something, Fade. Fade stared vacantly for a moment and then frowned.
Marat, eat, Alarans.
Tavi swallowed. I know. But if they were going to eat us, they wouldn't have given us blankets and a place to sleep, right?
Maybe. They like hot dinner,
Fade said darkly.
Raw dinner.
Tavi stared at him for a minute. That's enough help, Fade, he said. Get up. Maybe nobody's looking and we can make a run for it. They both stood up, and Tavi had just crept to the tent's flap to peek out when the flap swung out, letting a flood of pale sunlight in along with a slender Marat youth dressed in a long leather tunic. His hair had been pulled into a braid identical to Daroga's, though his body was far more slender, and his features far finer, sharper. The youth's eyes were an opalescent swirl of colours rather than the dark brown of Daroga's. His eyes widened upon seeing them, as though surprised, and a chipped dagger of some dark stone seemed to leap into his hands and swept at Tavi's face. Tavi leapt back, fast enough to save his eyes, but not quickly enough to avoid a swift hot pain high on his cheek. Tavi let out a yelp as Fade whimpered and jerked frantically at Tavi's shirt, dragging him back and unceremoniously to the floor behind himself. The Marat blinked at them, startled,
and then demanded something in the guttural Marat speech, his voice high, and Tavi thought perhaps nervous. "I'm sorry," Tavi said. "I don't understand you." From the floor he showed the Marat his open hands and tried to smile, though he supposed it looked rather sickly. "Fade, you're standing on my sleeve." The young Marat scowled, half lowering the knife, and demanded something else, this time in a different-sounding tongue. He looked from Tavi to Fade, face twisting into revulsion as he studied Fade's scars. Tavi shook his head, glancing at Fade, who moved his foot and warily helped Tavi to his feet, watching the young Marat with his eyes wide. The tent flap opened again, and Daroga entered. He stopped for a moment, staring at Tavi's face. The burly Marat growled something in a tone that Tavi recognized extremely well, though he normally heard it from his uncle after something had gotten complicated. The youth spun to face Daroga, hands sweeping behind his back and hiding the knife. Daroga scowled and rumbled something that made color flush the youth's cheeks. The youth snapped something back, to which Daroga replied with an unmistakable negative slash of his hand, together with the word, "Gna!" The youth thrust up his chin defiantly, snapped something in terse terms, and darted out of the tent, past Daroga's reach, moving as quickly as a frightened squirrel. Daroga lifted a hand and rubbed at the side of his face with it, then faced Tavi and Fade. The Marat studied them both with his dark eyes and grunted,
"My apologies for the behavior of my whelp, Kitai. I am called Daroga. I am the headman of the Sabotha, of the Gargant clan. You are Alarans and my prisoners. You are the enemy of the Marat, and we will partake of your strength."
Fade whimpered in his throat and clutched at Tavi's arm hard enough to make it go numb.
"You mean," Tavi asked after a moment's silence, "that you're going to eat us?"
"I do not wish to," Daroga said. "But such is the decree of Clan Chief Atsurak."
He paused for a moment, eyes focused on Tavi, and said,
"Unless this judgment is contested by our laws, you will give your strength to our people. Do you understand?"
Tavi didn't. He shook his head. Daroga nodded.
"Listen to me, Valley Boy. We, the Marat, prepare to move against the Alarans of the Bridge Valley. Our law calls you enemy. No one speaks otherwise. So long as you are enemy of the Marat, you will be our enemy and we will hunt you and take you."
He leaned forward, speaking slowly.
"So long as no one speaks otherwise."
Tavi blinked, slowly.
"Wait," he said. "What if someone says that I'm not an enemy?"
Daroga smiled, showing his teeth again.
"Then," he said, "we must hold trial before the One and discover who is correct."
"What if I say we're not your enemy?"
Daroga nodded and stepped back out of the tent.
"You understand enough. Come outside, Valley Boy. Come out before the One."
Chapter 26. Tavi glanced back at Fade and then followed Daroga out of the tent and into the blinding light of the first day of winter. Sunlight poured through crystalline skies to blaze over the snow that covered the ground in an almost perfect layer of white. It took Tavi's eyes long seconds to adjust, and for him to squint around him as he emerged from the tent, Fade clutching at his arm. They stood among hundreds of Marat. Marat men, most of them as heavily built as Daroga, sat at cooking fires, or watched casually, hands near the hafts of spears, or on chipped stone daggers, or fury-forged Alaran blades. Like Daroga, they wore only a brief loincloth despite the weather, and evinced no signs of discomfort, though some of them wore cloaks of hide and fur that seemed more ornamental or martial than made with the intention of keeping their owners warm or dry. Children ran here and there, dressed in the same long leather tunic Doroga's whelp had worn, and watched the strangers with obvious interest. To Tavi's astonishment, the women wore nothing more than the men, and lean muscular legs,
naked, strong shoulders and arms, and other things a proper Alaran boy was not supposed to see, but wanted to anyway, abounded. Tavi felt his face flush, and he shielded his eyes furiously, trying to pretend it was still the sun in them. One of the young warriors nearby made a quiet comment, and that same coughing laughter resounded around the camp, which Tavi saw was arranged down the slope of a long, bald hill. He felt himself flush further yet, and glanced at Fade. The slave stood beside him, no expression on his face, his eyes somewhat distant, but he put his hand on Tavi's shoulder and squeezed, as though reassuring himself that the boy was there. Duroga stood patiently waiting, and then nodded toward the crest of the hill. He started that way himself, clearly expecting to be followed. Tavi glanced around them at the young warriors, who watched him with studied disinterest, and fingered their weapons. Tavi moved his eyes to where a couple of older Marat women were chatting to one another and piling up wood beneath a roasting spit. One of them turned to Tavi and squinted at him, holding up a weathered thumb, then compared it to the length of the spit. Tavi swallowed and hurried up the hill after Daroga, Fade close at hand. At the top of the hill stood a dozen huge stones the size of a small house, arranged in a loose circle, some leaning upon others. They were rounded, any rough edges filed away by the winds and rains and seasons, but had obdurately resisted the elements, with no cracks apparent in their surfaces. At the center of the stones was a pool with seven white stones spaced around it. Upon two of the stones sat Marat. Tavi was struck at once by the difference in their appearance. Duroga, huge and solid, paced around to one of the stones. On the way there he passed a lean Marat woman, her pale hair shaved on the sides, to leave only a long silky mane atop her head. She, too, wore only a loincloth, though, more than her nakedness, Tavi noted an Alaran cavalry saber riding a legion-issue belt at her hip, and three badges, tarnished silver falcons, which spangled the belt. Her skin was shades darker than most of the Marat, and seemed weathered and tough, and her dark eyes were cool, appraising. As Daroga passed her, she lifted a hand, and the chief of the Gargant clan lightly rapped his knuckles against hers. Daroga settled on the next rock, folded his hands, and glowered at the third Marat on the hilltop. Tavi turned his attention to him. The man was of moderate height and lean build. His hair, though Marat pale, grew in a wild bristling mane that fell to his shoulders and continued to sprout from his skin down past his ears and along the lines of his jaw. His eyes were an odd shade of pale grey, almost silver, and he held himself with a slow, restless tension. The Marat caught Tavi looking at him and narrowed his eyes, baring his teeth. Tavi blinked to see huge, ripping canines, more properly called fangs, in the Marat's mouth. A snarl bubbled from his throat, and the man half rose from his stone. Duroga rose and spat.
"Will the headman of the Dragaha defile the peace of the Horto?"
The fang-toothed Marat glared from Tavi to Duroga. His voice came out as a bubbling growl, low, harsh, hardly understandable. Could a wolf speak? Tavi thought. It would sound like this.
"The headman of the Sabodha has already defiled its sanctity with these outsiders."
Duroga smiled.
"The Horto welcomes all who come in peace."
His smile widened a touch.
"Though perhaps I am mistaken. Do you believe that this is the case, Skagara?"
The woman said, without rising, "I believe he thinks you mistaken, Duroga." Skagara snarled toward the woman, his eyes flickering warily between her and Duroga.
"Stay out of this, Hashat. I need neither you nor the Kevras Ha to tell me what I believe."
Duroga rolled a pace toward Skagara. The big Marat flexed his hands with an ominous crackling of knuckles.
This is between you and I, Wolf. Do you believe me mistaken?
Skagara lifted his lips away from his teeth again, and there was a long and tense silence on the hill. At the end of it he let out a spiteful growl and looked away from Daroga.
There is no need to bring this matter before the One. Enough, then, Daroga said.
He continued staring at the other man and settled slowly back down onto his stone. Skagara mirrored him. Daroga then murmured,
We come before the One at this Horto.
He turned his face up toward the sun, eyes closing, and murmured something in his own tongue. The other two Marat did the same, speaking in a pair of distinct-sounding languages. Silence reigned on the hilltop for the space of a score of heartbeats, and then the Marat together lowered their eyes again.
I am called Daroga, headman of the Sabotha, the Gargant clan,
Tavi's captor said in formal tones.
I am called Hashat, headman of the Kevrasha, the Horse clan, stated the woman.
I am called Skagara, headman of the Dragaha, the Wolf clan.
Skagara rose impatiently.
I see no need for this Horto. We have captive enemies among us. Let us partake of their strength and go to battle.
Daroga nodded soberly.
Yes, these are our enemies. So has spoken Atsurak of the Shishkraka.
He turned his face to Tavi.
And none have spoken against him.
Tavi swallowed and stepped forward. His voice shook, but he forced the words out, and they rang out with clarion strength among the great stones on the hilltop.
I am called Tavi, of Bernard Holt, in the Bridge Valley, and I say that we are no enemies of the Marat.
There was a startled silence for the space of a breath, there at the hilltop, and then Skagara leapt to his feet with a howl of rage. From down the hill came the sudden angry shouts from dozens of throats, male and female alike, overridden by a chorus of the deep, ringing howls of direwolves. Daroga came to his feet at the same time, eyes blazing, and though he remained silent, the sudden basso bellows of dozens of gargants rolled like thunder through the winter sky, in tandem with the more distant screams of uncounted horses. Marat sprinted to the stones at the hilltop, though none of them stepped within their circle, pressing close, eyes wide and excited, gripping weapons, crowding to get close to see. And even so, they split themselves into three separate groups. Slab-shouldered, heavily muscled Marat of Clan Gargant, Clan Wolf, silent and fang-toothed and hungry-looking, and Clan Horse, tall and lean with their hair shaved into wind-tossed white manes. The isolated hilltop transformed into the center of a seething mob, excited murmurs, brandished weapons, and threatening glances. Tension and violence rode on the air like leashed lightning, pent up and straining for release. Daroga moved then, standing atop his stone, and held his arms above his head.
Silence! He roared, and his voice smothered sound atop the hill. Silence on the Horto! Silence, as a question is brought before the One!
Tavi stared around him at the reaction his words had caused and discovered that he had turned and pressed his back to Fade. His limbs shook with reaction. Glancing over his shoulder, he saw that Fade had assumed that same distant expression as before, eyes focused on nothing, though he had clasped one arm across Tavi's chest, fingers gripping the opposite shoulder steadily.
Fade, Tavi whispered. Are you all right?
Quiet, Tavi, Fade whispered back. Do not move.
Silence stretched over the hill, the sound of moaning wind the only noise. From the corner of his eye, Tavi could see Skagara, crouched before his stone, staring at Tavi with something very like hatred. Some instinct warned Tavi not to make eye contact, that it would only set the Marat into a killing rage, and that all of Clan Wolf would follow their headman, turning the ring of stones into a blood-spattered slaughterhouse. Tavi did not move. He barely breathed.
We the Marat,
Doroga said, turning in a slow circle.
We are the one and many people under the one. We prepare to march against the Alerans. We go to war at the words of Atsurak of the Shishkrakar. Atsurak, the bloody.
His words spat the next words, and Tavi heard the insolent contempt in them.
Atsurak, the whelp killer.
Snarls bubbled in the throats of dozens of Marat wolves on the hilltop, and once again came the low, harsh howls of direwolves from somewhere down the slope and out of sight. Doroga turned to face Clan Wolf without turning away from them, no trace of fear showing in his face.
Our law gives him that right, if none step forward to call him mistaken, to call him to the trial of blood.
His finger swung to point at Tavi.
This Alaran calls Atsurak mistaken. This Alaran says that his people are no enemy of the clans.
He is not of the clans,
Skagara snarled.
He has no voice here.
He stands accused with his people,
Doroga shot back.
And the accused have a voice at the Horto.
Only if the headmen of the clans decide that they do,
said Skagara.
I say he does not. You say he does.
He narrowed his eyes and stared at Hashat.
What says Clan Horse?
Hashat only then unfolded from her relaxed slouch on her stone, rising and facing Skagara without speaking for a moment, the wind tossing her mane out to the side like a banner. Then she turned, took a step into Doroga's shadow, and folded her arms. Let the boy speak. Excited murmurs ran through the Marat atop the hill. Fade, Tavi whispered. What is happening? Fade shook his head. Don't know. Careful. Doroga turned to Tavi and said,
Speak your belief, valley boy. Bring it out before the one.
Tavi swallowed. He glanced back at Fade and then slipped away from the slave, standing as straight as he could manage. He looked around the circle, at the Marat all staring at him with expressions of curiosity, contempt, hatred, or hope.
My people, he began, and choked, coughing,
his stomach fluttering so nervously that he abruptly became certain he was going to sick up again.
Ha!
Spat Skagara.
Look at him! Too afraid even to speak. Too afraid to bring what he believes before the one.
Doroga shot the wolf headman a narrow-eyed glance. Then he looked back at Tavi and said,
Valley boy, if you would speak, now is the time.
Tavi nodded, swallowing a sour taste from his mouth, and straightened again.
I'm not your enemy, he said.
His voice broke, and he cleared his throat. This time it came out stronger, ringing clear among the stones again.
I am not your enemy. My people have sought no quarrel with the Marat since before I was born. I don't know who this Atsurak person is, but if he says that we want to hurt your people, he's a liar.
The words rang among the stones and fell on an odd and puzzled silence. Tavi glanced over at Doroga and found the Gargant headman staring at him with his head cocked to one side.
Liar.
Doroga frowned and lowered his voice to a confidential murmur.
I do not believe Atsurak has mated with any of yours, if that is what you mean. He does not lie with Alarans.
No, Tavi said, nervous flutters coming back into his stomach. A liar, he's telling lies. Doroga blinked again. Then he nodded as though in sudden comprehension. He raised his voice again and said,
You believe he speaks mistakenly?
Yes, Tavi said. Wait, no, no, a lie is different than a mistake. But Tavi's words went unheeded as a shout rose up from the Marat around the hilltop. Skagara leapt atop his rock and raised his arms for silence.
Let him challenge! Let this Alaran whelp test his beliefs before the One. Let him face the trial of blood with Atsurak and end this matter.
Skagara sneered toward Tavi.
Atsurak will split his belly open before he can scream.
Atsurak is not here,
Doroga said, lifting his chin.
I am the eldest headman present, and it is thus my duty to take up the challenge to Atsurak's belief in his place.
Skagara's eyes widened.
Atsurak, he said, would not approve.
Doroga bared his white teeth.
Atsurak, he repeated, is not here. I will defend his belief as is proper.
Skagara growled.
As well. The strength of Doroga is well known. He will break the Alaran in the trial of his clan, even as Atsurak would do in a trial of blood. That would be correct, Doroga said, if I faced the trial myself. This will not happen. Only you, I, or Hashat may stand for Atsurak,
Skagara snarled.
Unless, Doroga said, I invoke the right of my heir to stand in my place in any trial before the One.
Skagara stared at the Gargant headman in stunned silence.
Kitai,
rumbled Doroga.
Step into the Horto.
The boy that had cut Tavi before appeared nervously at the head of the crowd, from behind the ranks of Clan Horse, Tavi noted. Doroga saw it as well and scowled.
Get in here, whelp.
Kitai hesitated at the edge of the stones, then hurried inside, steps carrying him lightly over to stand on the ground beside Doroga's stone. Doroga put his hand on Kitai's shoulder.
In this I ask you to stand for me. Will you?
Kitai swallowed and nodded without speaking. Skagara snarled.
Then draw the circle. Bear the contestants. Let the spawn of Doroga show the strength of the sire. The Alaran is no match in a trial of strength even for your whelp, Doroga.
The trial of Clan Gargant is the trial of strength, Doroga said. But Kitai is not yet bound to a clan. And the trial of Clan Fox, the clan of my whelp's mother, is the trial of wits. Kitai may accept challenge in either. And I decree that in this the Fox trial best serves the interest of the Marat.
Hashat frowned at Doroga as though she didn't fully understand, but she said,
I second Doroga's opinion. Let us bring the question before the One.
No.
Skagara spat.
The Fox Clan is no more.
Doroga spun toward Skagara again and advanced a step on the other man. His hands closed into fists with a rippling crackle of popping knuckles, and his jaws bulged where he clenched them. He came to a stop across the pool from the wolf headman, shaking with a visible effort to restrain himself.
I think, Hashat said quietly, that Doroga believes you mistaken, Skagara. I think he wishes to bring the matter before the One in the blood trial of the Wolf Clan.
Skagara gave one glance to Hashat and then stumbled back and off of his rock.
I will not forget this, Doroga,
he said, voice strained, high.
Atsurak will know how you have perverted our laws for your purposes. Get out of my sight,
Doroga said, in a quiet, dreadful voice. Skagara retreated behind an uneasy wall of warriors of Clan Wolf and down off of the hilltop. Uneasy talk broke out among the Marat watching, but Doroga turned in a circle, speaking to them.
Go back down. Hashat and I will arrange the trial. We will let the One help us decide what path we will walk.
The Marat departed then, peaceably, though there continued to be much talk among them, and though the wolves seemed to retreat down the hill cautiously, many fangs bared, low growls warning away those who came too near. A few moments later, Tavi and Fade stood with the three Marat alone. Doroga gave his shoulders a shake and blew out a long breath.
Very well,
the Marat said.
Hashat, what do you think is an appropriate trial?
The horse headman shrugged her shoulders.
The usual for this Horto.
Kitai drew in a quick breath. Doroga grimaced.
You know what I'm trying to do.
The wolf is right about one thing. You challenge tradition with this, if not the law. If you stretch things too much, you will lose the support of your own clan and mine. Best, I think, if you stay close to tradition wherever you can now.
Duroga looked at Tavi, then at Kitai.
Are they old enough?
Tavi stepped forward.
Wait just one second here. I did what you said you wanted me to do, Duroga. What have I gotten myself into?
Hashat turned to Tavi.
Aleran, you are alive, and not a meal. For that you should give your thanks to Duroga, and be silent.
Tavi snapped. I don't think so. This place almost exploded today. I'm being used. I think it's polite to at least tell me how and why.
Hashat narrowed her eyes and laid a hand on the hilt of her saber, but Duroga shook his head.
No, he is correct.
Duroga moved back to his stone and sat down, heavily.
Valley boy, you have agreed to a trial of wits with Kitai. The victor in the trial will be considered to hold the favor of the one in the question you raised.
Tavi frowned. You mean, if I win, then I'm right, and my people are not the enemy of the Marat?
Duroga grunted assent.
And my clan and Hashat's will refuse the leadership of Atsurak, who moves against your people.
Tavi's eyes widened. You're kidding me. Half the Marat horde just vanishes? Just like that?
He turned to look at Fade, his heart beginning to pound.
Fade, did you hear?
You haven't won the trial, Kitai said, spitting the words. Nor will you.
Duroga frowned at his whelp, and then said to Tavi,
It is my wish that you should win. I can take my people from this conflict, but it may not be the desire of the one.
I know it isn't mine, Kitai said.
The young Marat nodded to his father and then said to Hashat, Is your offer still open?
The horse headman glanced at Duroga, then nodded to Kitai.
Of course.
Kitai nodded at that and then stepped close to Tavi, multicolored eyes narrowed.
Wits or strength, it doesn't matter to me, Aleran. I will beat you.
Then he shot Duroga an angry glance and stalked off down the hill.
Tavi blinked.
But I would have thought he'd want to help you.
He glanced at Duroga.
The Marat shrugged.
My whelp will try to defeat you, as it should be. It is a good trial before the one.
But, Tavi swallowed, trial of wits? What is it?
Duroga said to Hashat,
See to it that they are prepared.
Then he turned and walked down the hill after his whelp.
Hashat folded her arms over her chest and eyed Tavi.
Well, Tavi asked, what am I supposed to do?
You will leave this night, to return with the blessing of night from the Valley of Trees, Hashat said simply. Who returns with it first is the victor of the trial. Follow me.
The Marat started off down the hill, lean legs taking long steps.
Blessing of night, Valley of Trees, right, fine.
Tavi turned to follow her, but stopped as Fade caught at his shirt. Tavi turned to the man, frowning.
What is it?
Tavi,
Fade said.
You must not do this. Let me face the trial.
Tavi blinked.
Fade, it's a trial of wits, remember?
Fade shook his head.
Valley of Trees. Remember that?
The boy frowned, turning to Fade.
What do you remember?
It is what the Marat called the Wax Forest.
Fade looked past Tavi to the retreating Hashat, his scarred face haunted.
One of you will surely die.
Chapter 27 Fidelia stopped, panting, as he and Aldric emerged from the heavily forested regions northeast of Bernard Holt and reached the causeway that led down the valley and ultimately to Garrison. His feet,
though he had wrapped them in strips of his cloak and urged his furies to ease his way, had worsened. The pain alone was nearly enough to stop him, even without the fatigue from too long spent walking, casting back and forth in a fruitless effort to catch the wily steadholder. Fidelius sank onto a flat stone beside the causeway, while the swordsman paced restlessly out onto the road.
"I don't get it," he said. "Why don't you just zoom us along like before?"
"Because we haven't been on a road," Fidelius said from between clenched teeth. "Riding an earth wave along a road is simple. Using one in the open countryside without intimate knowledge of the local furies is suicide."
"So he can do it, but you can't."
Fidelius suppressed a sharp comment.
"Yes, Aldrich.
We're crow bait."
Fidelius shook his head.
"We're not going to catch him at this rate. He left a half dozen false trails behind him and waited until we bought one of them before he raised his wave and went."
"If we had the horses, we don't,"
Fidelius said bluntly. He lifted his foot and unwrapped some of the cloth. Aldrich paced over to him. He stared down at his feet and swore.
"Crows, old man. Can you feel them?"
"Yes."
Aldrich knelt and unwrapped a bit more of the cloth, assessing the injuries.
"Getting worse. There's more swelling. If you let this go, you're going to lose them."
Fidelius grunted.
"There's still time. We need to..."
Fidelius looked up to see Itan dancing frantically in the nearest tree. He cast his eyes down the road west of them.
"Aldrich," Fidelius said, keeping his voice low. "Two men on the road coming toward us. Legion haircuts. Both armed."
Aldrich drew in a breath, closing his eyes for a moment.
"All right. Legionaries?"
"No uniforms. Age? Young."
Fidelius touched the stones of the road with one foot, reaching out for Vama.
"Using the road to help them run. Moving fast. They've got some training in warcrafting."
"How do we do it?"
"Wait for me to say," Fidelius said. "Let's find out whatever we can first."
He watched the pair of young men come running toward them along the road and managed a pained smile as they approached and slowed their pace.
"Morning, boys," he called. "Have you got a minute to help a couple of travelers?"
The young men slowed, and Fidelius took in the details as they came closer. Young, both of them, less than a score of years of age. Both were slender, though one was tall and already seemed to be losing his hair to a receding hairline. They shared similar long, lean features. Brothers, perhaps. Both were panting, though not heavily, from their run along the road. Fidelius tried to smile again and offered them his water flask.
"Sir,"
panted the taller of the young men, accepting the flask.
"Much obliged."
"You hurt?"
asked the shorter. He leaned a bit closer, peering at Fidelius's feet.
"Crows, you've really gotten them torn up."
"The storm forced us off the road last night," Fidelius said.
"There was a flood, and I had to kick my shoes off to swim. Been walking without them all morning, but I had to stop."
The young man winced.
"I'll bet."
He accepted the flask from his brother with a nod, took a quick drink, and offered it back to Fidelius.
"Sir," he said, "maybe you'd better get off the road. I'm not sure it's safe here."
Fidelius glanced at Aldrich, who nodded and made himself look busy redressing Fidelius's injured foot.
"Why do you say that, son?"
The taller of the pair answered.
"There's been problems in the valley, sir. Last night there was a big uprising of furies, local furies from Holders, that is, and my youngest brother spotted what he swears was a Marat scout by our Steadholt. That would be Warnerholt, sir."
"A Marat?"
Fidelius gave the young man a skeptical smile.
"Surely your brother was having some fun at your expense."
The Warnerholter shook his head.
"Regardless, there's been trouble in the valley, sir. Me and my brothers came home to help my father with a local matter, and it got out of hand. There was a fight, almost some killings, and we saw smoke coming from out east near Alderholt. Put together with last night and this sighting, we decided it would be best to put the word out."
Fidelius blinked.
My. So you're off to warn the garrison of trouble?
The young man nodded grimly. Head back down the road the way we came a piece, and look for a trail to the south. It will take you to Bernard Holt. We'd best not stay here, if you'll pardon us, sir. Sorry we can't help you.
That's all right, Fidelius assured him. We all have a duty to do, son.
He frowned, staring at the younger of the two for a moment.
Sir? The young man asked. You're about my height, aren't you?
Aldrich wiped the blood from his blade and said,
You could at least wait until he's dead.
Fidelius pulled the second boot from the shorter of the two men and sat down to pull them over his battered feet.
I don't have time.
I'm not sure that was necessary, Fidelius, Aldrich said. If word is out, it's out. Doesn't seem to be much sense in killing them.
I didn't think you'd mind, Fidelius said.
I'm good at killing. Doesn't mean I enjoy it.
Every man enjoys doing what he's good at.
Fidelius tightened the laces as much as he could, wincing in pain.
It was necessary. We have to stop anyone else from getting word to garrison or out the other end of the valley either.
But that Steadholder has already got through.
He's only one man, one report. The local count won't want to commit everything based on that. It will buy us time. If we can keep anything else from getting through, we'll make sure that Garrison is off guard. Is he dead?
Aldrich stooped over the barefooted boy for a moment.
He's gone. You want me to signal the men?
Yes.
Fidelius stood up, testing his weight on his feet.
They hurt.
They hurt abominably, but the boots were a tolerable fit. They'd hold together long enough.
And we'll have to get in touch with Atzerach again. Things are falling apart. We can't afford to wait any longer.
Fidelius stepped over the bodies of the young men of Warnerholt and glanced over his shoulder at the swordsman.
I'm starting the attack now.
Chapter 28 Cord forced Isana to watch what they did to Odiana. He had brought in a stool with him and he sat behind her within the ring of coals. He made her sit on the floor in front of him so that they could both see, as though it was some sort of theatre event.
She's a tough one,
Cord said after a long and sickening time.
Knows what she's doing. Survivor.
Isana suppressed the sickness in her stomach long enough to say, Why do you say that? Anything to take her mind from what was happening.
She's calculated. There, see how she fights? Just enough to get a man worked up. Then goes all liquid and helpless once he's on her. She knows every man wants to think he's got that kind of power over a woman. She makes them think what she wants to, and she's barely been roughed up at all.
Isana shuddered and said nothing.
It's tough to break someone like that. Hardened.
She's a woman, Cord. A person. She's not an animal to be broken. His voice carried something in it of an ugly smile.
Has she been a slave before?
I don't know, Isana said. I barely know her.
She saved your life, you know, Cord said. When we found you by the river, I made her do it.
Isana looked back at him and tried to keep the venom from her voice. Why, Cord?
Don't get me wrong, Isana. It isn't that I don't enjoy the thought of you dead. I could be happy with that.
His eyes didn't waver from the scene before them, glittering with something dark, angry, alien.
But my son is dead because of you, and that mandates something more substantial.
Dead? Isana said. She blinked slowly. Cord, you have got to understand. This isn't about you. It isn't about the hearing or Warner's daughter.
The crows it isn't,
Cord said.
Because of you, we had to go to Bernard Holt. Because of you, we had to run out into the storm. Because of you, we had to watch and make sure no one went running to Graham for help. And sure enough, that little freak of yours did. Because of you, Bitan died.
He looked down at her, showing his teeth.
Well, now I'm the strong one. Now I'm the one making the rules, and I'm going to show you, Isana, how low a woman can be brought.
before I finish what the river started.
Isana turned to him. Cord, don't you understand? We could all be in danger. Bernard saw... He struck her with a closed fist. The blow drove her back and to the floor, her body helplessly loose and unresponsive. After a disorienting moment, the pain started, rippling up from her mouth, her cheek. She tasted blood on her tongue, where she'd cut herself on her own teeth. Cord leaned down and seized her hair, jerking her face up to his.
"Don't speak to me like you're some kind of person. You aren't anymore. You're just meat now."
He gave her head a vicious little shake.
"You understand that?"
"I understand," Isana grated,
"that you're a little man, Cord."
She dragged in a breath, enough to make the words cut.
"You can't look past yourself, not even when something is coming to crush you. You're small. No matter what you do to me, you'll still be small. A coward who hurts slaves because he's afraid to challenge anyone stronger."
She met his eyes and whispered,
"You've got me because you found me helpless. You'd never be able to do anything to me if you hadn't, because you're nothing."
Cord's eyes flashed. He snarled, a mindlessly animal sound, and hit her again, harder. Stars flew across her vision, and the dusty floor rose up to meet her. She wasn't sure how long she lay there, pain and thirst blinding her, making her unaware of anything else. But when she came to her senses again and sat up, only Cord and his son Arik remained. Odiana lay in a heap on the floor, not far away, curled onto her side, her legs drawn up, her hair hiding her face. Cord tossed a flask down beside Isana. It made a soft, slight gurgling sound, as though it held only a tiny bit of water.
"Go ahead," he told her. "Nothing in that one. I want you to see what happens."
Isana took up the flask, throat burning. She didn't believe that Cord had told her the truth, but she felt faint, weak, and her throat felt as though it had been coated with salt. She pulled the cap from it and drank, almost before she realized what she was doing. Water, warm but untainted, flowed into her mouth. Half a cup, perhaps. Certainly no more. It was gone before it had done much to help her thirst, but at least it had eased the maddening ache of it. She lowered the flask, looking up at Cord.
"Arik," Cord said, "bring me the box."
Arik turned toward the door but hesitated.
"Pa, maybe she's right. I mean, with what Tavi said at the river and all..."
"Boy!"
Cord snarled, cutting him off.
"You bring me that box, and keep your mouth shut. You hear?"
Arik went pale and swallowed.
"Yes, Pa."
He turned and vanished from the smokehouse. Cord turned back to her.
"The thing about all of this, Isana, is that you're too naive to be as afraid as you should be. I want to help you with that. I want you to know what's going to happen."
"This is useless, Cord," Isana said.
"You might as well kill me when I'm ready."
Cord walked over to Odiana, then reached down and seized her casually by the hair. The woman whimpered and twisted her shoulders, struggling feebly to get away from him. Cord gathered her hair up, lock by lock, until he held the length of it in his fist.
"See this one here, she's a hard case. Knows what she's doing, knows the game, how to survive it."
He shook her hair, eliciting a whimper.
"All the right sounds to make. Right, girl?"
With Odiana's face bowed, facing away from Cord, Isana could see her expression now. The Water Witch's eyes were hard, her expression cold, distant. But she kept her voice weak, shaking.
"Please," Odiana whispered. "Master, don't hurt me. Please, I'll do anything you want."
"That's right,"
Cord rumbled, smiling down at the woman.
"You will.
Arik opened the door and entered, carrying a long, flat box of smooth, polished wood.
"Open it," Cord told him. "Let her see."
Arik swallowed. Then he paced around in front of where Cord held Odiana by the hair and opened the box. Isana saw the contents. A strip of metal, a band perhaps an inch wide, lay on the cloth within the box, dully throwing back the light of the fires. Odiana's expression changed. The hardness vanished from her eyes, and her mouth dropped open in an expression of something close to horror. She recoiled from the box, but was brought up short by Cord's grip on her. Isana heard her let out a whimper of pain, and unmistakably of fear.
"No,"
she said at once, her voice suddenly harsher, high, panicky.
"No, I don't need that. You won't need it. No, don't. I promise you won't need it. Just tell me what you want."
"It's called a discipline collar,"
Cord said to Isana in a conversational voice.
"Fury crafted. They're uncommon this far north, but useful sometimes. She knows what it is, I think."
"You don't need it,"
Odiana said, her voice high and desperate.
"Please, oh, Furies, please, Master, you don't need that. I don't need it. No, 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 no."
"Arik, put it on her."
Cord jerked Odiana up, holding her weight up off the floor by her hair, forcing her chin up, the slender strength of her throat to be exposed. Odiana's eyes, still fastened on the collar, widened, white surrounding them. She screamed. It was a horrible sound, one that welled deep in her throat and rose up through her mouth without regard for meaning, for shape, horrible and feral. She turned and struggled, even as she screamed, her hands reaching toward Cord's face with desperate speed. Her nails left bloody weals down one of his cheeks, and even as she got her feet underneath her, she kicked one bare foot at the inside of his knee. Still holding her hair in one hand, Cord dragged her to one side, off of her feet, and with the other clutched her throat. Then, with a casual surge of power, doubtless drawn from his fury, he lifted her clear of the ground by her throat, so that her feet dangled and kicked below her torn skirts. She fought him even so, struggling wildly against him. She raked at his arm with her nails when she couldn't reach his face, but he held her, expression never changing. She kicked at his thigh, his ribs, but without any leverage, the blows did nothing to deter the big steadholder. She struggled, grunting, gasping, making low animal sounds of fear. Then her eyes rolled back in her skull and she went slowly limp. Cord held her suspended for a moment more before he lowered her to the floor again and once more held her by the hair, baring her throat.
"Arik."
The young man swallowed. He flicked a glance at Isana. His expression strained, difficult to read. Then he stepped forward and slipped the metal band about Odiana's throat. It settled into place with a quiet, sharp click. She took a ragged breath and let out a little groan. A desperate sound, even as Cord released her hair with a contemptuous jerk. She fell onto her side, her eyes clutched closed, and lifted her fingers to her throat. She began pawing and jerking at the collar, desperate and clumsy. Cord drew a knife from his belt and pricked his thumb with it, then grabbed Odiana's wrist in his huge hands and did the same to hers. Her eyes opened and she saw him, and once again she went wild, letting out a little shriek and struggling against him with a confused and disoriented determination. Cord smirked. With casual strength he forced her bloodied thumb to the collar, and then pressed his own down beside it, scarlet marking the metal. Odiana whimpered,
"No!"
Frustration warping the word, tears making her eyes shine. Then she shuddered. Her lips moved again, but nothing intelligible came from them. She shuddered again, and her eyes lost focus. Her body relaxed, the straining against Cord's hands easing slowly away. Once more her body shook, this time accompanying it was a low gasp.
"Bonding,"
Cord said, looking up at Isana. His eyes glittered. His hands roved over the woman on the ground now, casually intimate, possessive.
"This will take a few minutes to set in.
Odiana gasped, arching into Cord's touch, her eyes empty, lips parted, her body moving in a slow, languid roll.